Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of April, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to bring you news, views, things to choose, not to lose, kick up your shoes, dunk the blues. Here comes the news. Actually, today's first story was going to be about Microsoft delaying a major Windows 10 update because the beta testers were all getting blue screens. So, duh. Which explains why today's poll of the week is Microsoft has delayed the latest Windows 10 update. And that's what's in the forum. However, we don't care about that because, of course, this was actually on Stop the Cap like 2 days ago. And I completely missed it. I don't know how. But Thomas Golisano, B. Thomas Golisano, Rochester billionaire and philanthropist, is seeking expedited regulatory approval from New York's Public Service Commission to acquire Greenlight Networks. Exactly. Greenlight has been around since 2012, and they've been slowly overbuilding in overbuilding Charter Spectrum and Frontier service areas in eastern Monroe County, offering gigabit Ethernet. But times may be running short for Greenlight's competitive broadband speed advantage because Charter Spectrum is reportedly planning to introduce gigabit service as early as April 25th throughout upstate New York, except, of course, sorry for Buffalo. I don't know why they aren't doing it in Buffalo, but apparently they are not.
Maybe they've already got it.
Verizon Fios is already there.
Well, because of Fios, yeah. And Golisano has filed. And he's urgently requesting an expedited review. Greenlight seeks commission approval in order to avoid unnecessary delays in the completion of its network expansion projects and in order to secure valuable, committed outside investors who share Greenlight's vision and believe in its ability to execute on its plan. Basically, the problem with Greenlight is amazing. I've had it for 2-3 years now,
yeah,
whatever it is.
At least 2 years.
And it is amazing. It is very fast. It is constant. It is clean. I don't get you. When I had...
Well-priced.
It is well-priced. When I had cable, there were times a day it would be slow and times a day it would be fast. I've never not had at least the speed that I'm paying for, if not more.
Yeah.
And so, you pay for 100, you get 102, 103, and it's never low. There was one day when twice in 2.5 years now, it's gone out. One time was somebody digging up a gas line or a sewer line, and they cut the cable. Oh well,
can't
tell me about that. And the other one was somebody else doing something similar. But they got it fixed as soon as possible. The problem Greenlight has always had is that they have been slow. And I don't call up and tell me how slow they've been. We all know how slow they've been. Or they've skipped one small half acre.
We don't even want to go there. When I can sit there and they say, it's not available in your area right now. They got the area marked off. But yet it's right across the street from me.
You can pretty much throw a stone in any direction and hit a house that's got
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And his arm's not that good, folks. It's not like he's
professional.
Even a double A player.
Little League.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even want me.
Basically, that's been their problem. And part of that, of course, is regulatory, because rights of way are held by Frontier and by Spectrum, Charter, Time Warner, whatever you're calling them this week. And so consequently, they have not been quick to expedite requests for right-of-way.
Good way to put it.
So I understand all of that. But the other part of the problem, of course, is funds. It costs a lot of money to build out an infrastructure quickly. Tom Golisano both has and can raise that kind of money. Mm-hmm. He also has the clout to help expedite other areas. And so I think that if, in fact, and I want to apologize. I'm sure Mark Murphy is listening because he listens every week. If you are listening, please call in. I did not get a hold of him. I will have to do that this week. Or Mark, call me at your earliest convenience. I know you're a busy guy, particularly right now. But I'd like to get you on the show and talk about this, because this is big for our area.
And
Very big.
With this kind of movement, unlike Spectrum, they don't have to bundle to get the higher speeds with you know with Spectrum. Oh, you got to bundle it with this and this, or this and this.
Right.
So you know, even though they say it's only $24.95, I think, for the 100 megabits.
Right.
It's they're after you bundle with something else.
Unbundled, it's like 70.
Right. Right. Yeah. The other thing, of course, is that. Let me start out by saying this has not happened. There's no indication that this will ever happen. But now that net neutrality is dead, it is perfectly legal for somebody like Spectrum to say, you want to access a competitor's site like Netflix? We're going to have to charge you more.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll make it slower on our network. Whereas Greenlight has no axe to grind. They don't have a dog in that hunt. All they're doing is providing the fastest internet they can.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that if you talk to anybody who knows networking, they will tell you that the top speed of cable is a lot lower than the top speed of fiber.
Yeah.
So where Spectrum can go at the top end is a lot slower than where Greenlight can go at the top end. Now, again,
it's all so much faster than we have now.
Well, it's all so much faster, right? And
I want an OC45 to my house.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Yeah,
I would take fiber at 10 gigabit. I don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. perfectly happy. 100 megabits is
you already got Greenlight.
I do already have Greenlight. I can't tell you how happy I am.
Yeah, I
never think about it anymore.
We've joked over time that as internet services get faster, the things you want to download are bigger and bigger.
Yes.
When we had, you know, our 2400 baud modem, we were downloading pages of text.
Oh, heck, and then, 24, yeah, try 300.
300 baud.
I could read at 1200 baud, but at 24 it had to buffer.
I told you, I had to rewrite, I wrote a terminal program in Forth, and I had to rewrite it after when I got 2400 baud modem,
mm-hmm,
to buffer to disk because I couldn't read it fast enough.
Yeah.
Son of a pup.
So then we were downloading megabit files and then 10 megabit files, 100 megabit files. Now we're downloading gigabit. If you want to download a movie, you know, 2 or 3 gigabytes for a movie.
Right.
And, you know, even on, 100 megabit, that still takes 10 minutes.
Right.
So no matter how fast your internet is, it takes 10 minutes to download what you want.
Right. Well, no, it doesn't.
Not anymore.
Not for me.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, I was downloading a different version of Linux because I wanted to try somebody else's thing as a VM. It took a couple of minutes to download essentially a CD's worth.
Yeah.
It just popped right down. It was amazing.
And we used to not think about, you know, how big the files are. We just wanted to download them. But we're downloading movies more often, you know, streaming video more often. 3 or 4 people in the house streaming different video. System updates. You know, the Windows 10 update, you know, the Mac updates, 3 or 4 gigs each.
Right.
And so the files are just getting bigger and bigger, partly because they know you've got broadband internet.
Right. And that's partially it.
Yeah.
But it's pretty amazing. And one of the things that kind of excites me is the possibility. And again, there's no indication that this is happening or could happen or will happen. but the possibility that somebody like Greenlight would partner with the city and provide municipal broadband. Certainly, yeah. With the death of net neutrality, that is an easier possibility to handle.
They already have a deal with Frontier, but you have to be a Frontier customer and you have to pay extra. So if you're already a Frontier internet customer, you have to pay extra to get the city wireless,
right?
In order to get,
and it isn't fast
around, yeah. And so on that front, we're seeing 4G and the coming 5G cellular is often much faster than you could get out of Wi-Fi internet to your house anyway. So we're seeing a lot of people instead of doing what used to be the 10 megabit cable, you're getting 30 or 40 megabit on your 4G cell phone, and you just use that.
But and many people are doing
many
that.
Many people are doing that, but the cellular companies are still on the meter plan, so you pay by the gigabyte, where the landline companies aren't doing that
right
yet, because again, with the death of net neutrality, they can now start doing things like that if they want to,
right?
So you have to stop and think, and do I want to watch this movie? I'm paying for Netflix. Do I want to pay again to download the movie because it's not part of my subscription?
Yep.
And your broadband cap is going to get charged for it,
right? Hello, hi, how are you? I apparently had too much to drink this morning. One interesting statistic is that, according to the Fiber Broadband Association, if you have a fiber connection to your home, it increases the home's value by over $5,400. And I know that that's certainly possible, because when the folks next door to us sold their home, I was talking to the guy who owned it and sold it, and he said the first question everybody asked was, do you have fiber? Because it's in this neighborhood.
Yep.
The very first question. And so right now, fiber is the fastest thing you can get, and it's fastest at the least cost, which is a beautiful thing. And the ability to do that, you can get up to a gigabit down and 100 megabits up, and not everybody needs gigabit,
but
certainly 100 megabit, and there's an intermediate one at 500 megabits, and it's ridiculously cheap. I shouldn't say that.
No.
Do not raise your prices, Greenlight, but it's ridiculously cheap.
Well, and the thing of it is because of us wanting more and more, the TV networks and everything else, being able to stream everything, right from your computer up to your TV.
And streaming video games.
Yeah.
My son's upstairs playing his video games. I'm watching a stream in one room. My wife is watching a stream in another room. You need faster internet for
that. Yeah,
internet.
It's just the way it is. Just like we've evolved from the 300 baud modems up to internet service that we have nowadays, it's just got to keep moving forward, and this is the way to do it. And Galassano's vision, that the need for speed is definitely there, and why not back something that's forward?
To Mr. Galassano and to Mr. Murphy for having the vision to get together and do this. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, that'd be-
it should be amazing. It should be amazing.
Oh, it's going to be huge. I mean,
and don't forget, you can give us a call if you want to talk about this or, well, any kind of computery thing. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. This is Soundbites, and we are the truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Ooh, the sun is out. How do you like that?
I'm not sure what that is, the giant flaming orange orb in the sky looking down on us. I can't go out.
I looked out the window and my eyes squinted and I hissed.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I may have done a bad thing. I got my light coat back out.
Oh, you fool.
Yeah. But I didn't put away the heavy coat yet.
So. Oh, there you go. All right. What's
anyways,
up, Mark?
I wanted to tell you, I ran into a very peculiar problem this week, both with Firefox and with Google Chrome. And before I tell you the problem, I ran the security tango and didn't find anything.
Okay.
And what's going on is I'm running the 64-bit version of Firefox. And I will launch the program, and my computer runs at a crawl. I mean, I can't even open the task manager without it taking 30 seconds to open. And then my processor's peaked at 99%. And then I close it. I close the program, and granted, this is with one tab open only.
Version of Windows are you running?
I'm running 10.
Okay.
With the latest update.
Okay.
And I went and used Chrome and started out fine, and after a couple minutes, computer was running slow as molasses. And I couldn't figure it out, and I would reboot the computer, and everything would start running fine, and then it would slow down. Then I decided, let me go back to 32-bit Firefox. Went back to 32-bit Firefox. I'm not having any problems with Firefox now in a 32-bit form.
Weird. I was just thinking of crypto malware that sucks your processor down. But if Security Tango didn't find anything, that's probably
yeah,
not
nothing.
It.
No way. I mean, even not malware bytes, but
Super Anti-Spyware
didn't even find a tracking cookie. Pretty I must clean. Have done very well cleaning yeah. out all my cache. And
try running the browser in safe mode, which I
did.
You hold the Shift key down while you launch.
I did.
So that eliminates any
and
weird
it
extensions.
It still ran slow. And I even went in and turned off hardware acceleration. Still ran slow.
Okay, here's what I want you to try. A number of people are having this problem. So I want you to try deleting the cache.
Right.
In Firefox and in Chrome, by the way.
Okay.
And see if that solves the problem. There seems to be an issue with cache corruption.
Okay.
Now, who knows? But we're seeing it in both 32 and 64-bit, although 64-bit is particularly the new Quantum,
right,
which is 57 and up. We're seeing it running ridiculously slowly. And sometimes it'll freeze up, and when you go to, of course, when you go to Mozilla's support pages, that you know, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do this? Can you do that? So they're just pushing it down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I even went in and I noticed that in the task manager, it's running like six processes, you know, and it says it should be defaulted to four, and even if you And it's running at the four defaulted processes, it's still running at five or six most of the time.
Yeah. The other thing you might try is...
Well, try the cache also.
Try the cache, absolutely.
I thought I cleared everything out, but, you know, I've made mistakes before.
Well, it may not be you, but I want you to do that. And I also want you, do you need accessibility services?
No.
Then in that case, turn them off. Under options, under the menu, of course.
Right.
Under options, under privacy and security, look under permissions and check the setting that says prevent accessibility services from accessing your browser.
Okay.
And see if that helps, because we're seeing that also can be an issue.
So it should be checked then.
Right, you want to prevent them.
Okay.
So if it's not checked, check it.
Which antivirus do you have?
Webroot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Try disabling that temporarily. Because I'm also seeing some reports about people have had issues with Avast and AVG.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're trying to scan every file that the browser is opening, and that can clog things up.
Right. Okay. Right. We'll try all those things. Oh, by the way, since I have a solid-state drive in this newest computer I got, I bought it locally, the Security Tango runs ridiculously fast.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I mean, fast.
Yeah.
There is an issue with solid-state drives in Firefox. I don't remember if Firefox has fixed it yet. Your cache files are set to update every minute or something like that.
Okay.
And so that's writing gigabytes of data to your flash drive every minute.
That's bad.
Which wears out the drive faster.
So I have to wait for them to fix that.
Well, there's a setting you can turn to change how often it updates the cache.
Okay.
And I'm looking for that as well. And they may have fixed that in a newer version. All right, in settings, it's browser.sessionstore.interval.
Okay.
So if you go into about colon config and search for that,
okay,
you can change the session store to be a higher number so it doesn't write so often.
Right. Are you going to post a link for that?
Yes.
Okay, awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, a couple of people that found this saw that they were running, you know, their cache was running hundreds of gigabytes a day.
Niska.
And the way SSDs work is every time you write data to the SSD, it wears it out a little bit.
Yep.
And so the more you write to it, the faster you wear it out. And so, you know, you could take a 10-year life SSD drive and knock it down to a couple of months by writing so much data all the time.
Right. You can also go in, I believe, and change where the cache is stored.
Right. So if you have a spinning drive, you can move the cache there. So a lot of computers are now coming with both the solid-state drive for speed and a spinning drive for capacity. Because big solid-state drives are ridiculously expensive. What is it? A 4-terabyte spinning drive is, what, $200 maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
4-terabyte SSD drive is about $5,000.
Yep. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. This bright orb here is affecting my vestigial effect there. I keep sneezing because of the bright sun getting into my eyes.
Yes, people have. That's an actual, apparently, genetic thing. Some people are susceptible to sun sneezing and some are not.
Yeah, it's been rough on me.
Yeah.
So, well, I have three questions, and I hope two of them should be brief, and one is going to be maybe a little longer because it involves Thunderbird.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me get to the easy one. I'm planning to install Ubuntu 18.04, soon to come out, I believe, this week. On a laptop, and I'm following the instructions that I'm studying ahead of time, and I see that I shouldn't have to worry about making any BIOS changes. The only one that I seem to have a conflict about people talking about is to go in and change the fast boot to disable it. What do you think should be done if I'm doing this Windows 10 dual booting with Ubuntu 18.04.
Well, that entirely depends on which BIOS you have. It's not like I can say go to number 4 or number 8 or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Because every company has a slightly different BIOS installed these days. So what you want to do is generally speaking, you do not have to disable fast boot. But if you do, it's not really that big a deal.
Okay. All right. Next item that comes up that I've seen.
You remember the old days where it counted your RAM?
Right.
That's one of the things that Fastboot does, is it doesn't count all of the RAM. So if you had a couple of megs, that might take, you know, 10, 15 seconds. Now if it's going to count up 16 gigs of
megs, right.
It might take forever.
Okay. Now, this is not too much that's going to be on this laptop.
There you go.
The other issue that comes out I've seen is some people say, just take what Ubuntu Live DVD will do. It says it will recognize Windows 10 is on it, and it will install next to it. Just follow the tools there. But I've seen other people argue and say, no, go ahead and use something such as Gparted and do the shrink the hard drive, you know, make your own partitions, including the swap. Which do you think is the smarter way to go?
Well, again, it entirely depends. If Windows has taken your whole hard drive.
Yes, it does.
It can not want to let go, and so you need to do the individual, the manual partitioning. However, when you go to install, one of the things it'll tell you is how big the partition is that you have left.
Yes.
So what you do is you start it up and let it say, okay, here's my hard drive, go. And it'll say, well, we're going to install it on here, and you have this much space on it. Is that okay? And if it's not, then you can do a manual.
Okay.
But I've done both ways, and I've done the third way, which is just wipe out Windows. And all of them work. Pay attention to every single thing you click on when you do it by hand.
Okay.
But other than that, whatever you do should work fine.
Okay. All right. The last one is Thunderbird. I have followed your instructions that you wrote in the newspaper back in February, and I cannot get my Frontier addresses onto the computer using Thunderbird. I changed all the things, as you said, follow them correctly, put in the appropriate changes into account settings, security settings, blah, blah, blah. Nothing. What I'm thinking is I have another laptop that I've never configured Thunderbird on. I'm wondering if it would be smart for me to go in that laptop, that computer, and set up the account, but using, the whole address, et cetera, because last time I did it many years ago, it did it automatically, just about setting things up.
Right.
So I'm wondering, should I do that and then transfer that back to the computer I really use most often and then just set up another ID? Because just like I could go with Firefox dash small r, I think it is, I get it, I can make up a whole new identity,
right,
you know, and then direct it to this directory. So this way then I'll have four of them there, but at least I'll have everything off of the server of Frontier.
Right. Well, the first thing you want to do is have you okay, there's one I wrote in the paper, but everything is a little weird when it comes to Frontier Mail. What they want you to use is POP3, not IMAP.
Yeah.
And they have instructions on their website and about POP3 Mail. You also have to make sure that you have a secure connection, an SSL connection.
Yep.
And I have seen multiple people having slightly different addresses.
Yep.
And it's just weird. And I don't.
Sometimes you get a frontier.com, sometimes you've got frontiernet.net.
That's where frontiernet.net.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the tricks we.
One of the things they say to you do is frontier.com.
I've tried that. I've looked on their website. I've even spoken to their service rep.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take. It will not come down using Thunderbird.
One of the tricks I've found is that since Frontier uses Yahoo as its back-end server, put in Yahoo as your server addresses.
I did that.
And Yahoo supports IMAP, where Frontier doesn't.
Right.
Because most of us want to use IMAP, so it synchronizes your computers and your phones and your tablets.
Yeah.
So you don't have to delete the same messages over and over and over again.
Well, I tried that, too. It still doesn't work. And I've reloaded Thunderbird on the Ubuntu.
What happens when you try? Are you getting an error message of any kind?
It just goes ahead. It doesn't. Oh, one of the things I expected to do is ask for a password, so it doesn't do that. When I've made all these changes, no password comes up. It says it's connecting, and I see the little bar just keep going and going and going, and then it just times out.
Okay, a couple of things. First, and I hesitate to say this, make sure that you've got periods, not commas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I see that quite often. Secondly, if it's not asking you for a password, it's not going to the right place.
Yes.
So that's why I say look for comma. We got to take a break. Stay on the line.
Will do.
Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite, and we still have Walter from Greece on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay, here's a couple other things I need you to try.
Okay.
One thing is, are you using the right port?
Yes, I've gone ahead using, again, your guideline from that news article was a port 995 for pop.mail.yahoo.com.
Right.
And then imap.mail.yahoo.com at port 993, and then for the SMTP, etc., ports 465 or 587. I've tried them.
Right. Well, 465 is really the one. Okay. Look, what it sound if it's not bringing you back anything?
Yeah.
Who is your internet service provider?
Frontier.
Oh. Boy, that ought to work.
Yeah.
You would certainly think. Hey, here's another thing that you can try, and it will tell me something. What I want you to do is to go. Do you have a Gmail account?
My wife does, but yeah, I can go ahead.
Yeah, get a Gmail account.
Okay.
And one of the things you can do with Gmail is tell Gmail to pull the mail from Frontier.
Okay.
This is just going to tell me a couple of things about the way it works. And Steve can put both the IMAP server setting up and some instructions on how to do this. But basically, you go into a settings and accounts, and this is in Gmail on the web.
Yes.
Right. Go. By the way, can you get to Frontier Mail on the web?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So if you go into Gmail settings, accounts and import, and add a mail account. You just put in your information on Frontier, just put in your email address, and it says import emails from my other account, POP3. Check that. Click next, and then it wants your email address in the user field and your password, and the POP server and the port, and boom, you're kind of done. You can choose whether or not you want to send mail from that address or however you want to do it. But the basic point I'm trying to make here is that you want to be able to see if you can get at your mail and that you've put in all the things correctly. And if you can, then the problem is somewhere in Thunderbird, and I don't know what that would be. Because while I had a Frontier account, my mail came through without a problem using exactly the set up that I put in the paper. So I'm not entirely sure what the error is now, but I have also seen that if people misspell Frontier or put a comma instead of a period, and that can be a very small thing, that it tries to get somewhere that doesn't actually exist, and that's when you run into the timeout issues.
Okay.
You could try opening a console window and watching the error message go by, but that probably won't help.
That probably won't help. I would
unless it's something like password invalid.
Yeah,
right. But it says it never gets that far.
But right. So somewhere this.
So that's what I'm thinking. Is somewhere misspelled Frontier, or
well, then it should come
IE.
Back. Account.
Well, you would think so.
Yeah, invalid login or something like that.
Well, you'd think so eventually, but if he's not waiting long enough, and it can be minutes.
Oh, I do wait. I do wait.
I don't know, and it just never comes back with any error message.
None. Just says time's out. That's it.
Just time out.
Yeah, I would. I don't know what else to tell you. Try those things.
Okay, will do.
Sorry.
No, you've been very helpful. I appreciate everything you've told me.
Well, good
Thank
luck.
You.
Yep. There's just a lot. There's just a lot. When it's something like email, there's the tiniest little thing can cause an issue. We've seen that more than once and often we see that it is in fact the problem of a comma instead of a period, or misspelling frontier.
Or frontier.net instead of frontiernet.net.
Right, frontiernet.net. Okay. All right, back to the phones. And it's our friend Philip from Rochester, New York. Yes, it is. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right. It's been a busy few days here.
Yeah. Can I tell them who this is really?
Yes, you can.
This is the world famous Philip Dampier, the man behind StopTheCap.com.
And the one that keeps your data caps off your internet access. So
yes, indeed. He is the person that we should all be thanking.
Just celebrated 10 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, as we did. Yeah, and it was April 15th or so, 2009 is when Time Warner Cable tried to put that nice 40-gig cap on everybody's internet access.
And Phil is the guy who got on his trusty white steed, his charger, and went to battle for us. And he does that every time, and we owe Phil an extreme debt of gratitude. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, you're welcome, and with everyone's support, because we protested right on the front lawn of Time Warner Cable, and then Chuck Schumer came to town, and they pulled the plug on it, and they've never even contemplated trying it again.
Yep.
So it's been a busy week. I had an interesting email yesterday from Tom Golisano himself.
Ooh.
Who's telling me that, we're getting in the broadband business. So I'm like, okay, that's interesting. So I wanted to give everyone a little update on all of this and some background.
Jeez.
Because there's some reasons why all this stuff is going on right now. You know, we see Tom Golisano, who's, a multi-billionaire, suddenly is getting into the broadband business and making this acquisition of Greenlight Networks. And the reasons, I think, for everyone should be pretty clear if you've ever tried to sign up for Greenlight and it's not in your area.
That is the number one complaint, of course, that we always hear.
Tell me about it. It's across the street from me.
And it's across the street from me. I've been sitting with an easements required for about 8 months here. And I'm like, give me the papers. I'll go knock on neighbors' doors.
Right.
Sign this.
So
we can get going. But, the biggest reason that Greenlight has struggled is that they're undercapitalized. It's very expensive to lay fiber in the different neighborhoods around this area. And you need a lot of pole permits and money and contractors and all that. And for a long time, they've been going from neighborhood to neighborhood trying to get this work done. They've made substantial progress on the eastern side of Monroe County. But right when you get to the Genesee River, pretty much everything west of that is a fallow ground.
Right.
And that's why people in Greece are so upset all the time, and some of the other suburbs and such. And Tom Golisano's biggest reason for getting into this business is that he's going to make a lot of money.
Well, duh.
And that's always a good reason to get into the internet.
Why he does most of the things he does.
And honestly, I hope he makes another billion.
Yeah. I mean, this is an entrepreneur and a person that is also, despite heading down to Florida at the time, he still pays attention and cares for us up here.
Yep.
And you never know what other...
We've been in a broadband swamp for many years here with a nice monopoly and Frontier that's kind of like running 1990s technology.
Oh, that's very generous.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know that Frontier stood for the Old West phone company, but,
people don't want higher speeds.
Still to this day in my house, they still send me advertisements offering me 3 megabit DSL. And I'm like, oh!
Wow!
So, by using Tom Golisano's name, resources, and money, we can pour a ton of money into this and get this city wired. And that's very important. And they've actually, when they filed the petition with the Public Service Commission to make the acquisition, they filed something, it's interesting, it's called an expedited petition, which means they're in a hurry.
Yeah.
And the reason they're in a hurry is that sources have told us that on April 25th, which happens to be my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Spectrum will be announcing gigabit service across upstate New York, with the exception of Buffalo.
Right.
And this is the fruits of the labor of that digital conversion that we've all been going through here in Rochester all spring, where people have to march down to the cable company to get those boxes put on their TVs because they've taken away all the analog TV channels.
Right.
And now that's freed up all that space for additional broadband. So they have been in a real hurry, and they have to in New York State because it was one of the conditions that we fought hard for when they acquired Time Warner Cable, is that what's in it for consumers here in New York? And New York was the only state in the country that put some stringent conditions on this transaction, which requires that they invest in our area and actually provide us with something approximating 21st century broadband service.
Wouldn't that be nice?
So, if this all comes to pass and they're actually ready to throw the switch on Wednesday, we're going to start seeing some changes. So, the biggest one being that gigabit service would become available. There is a caveat, however. Spectrum, I have to get used to these new names.
Right.
Spectrum's idea of gigabit broadband is 940 megabits down, and I think it's like 20 up. Something along that line, or maybe 40. So it's one direction, gigabit.
Right.
And the other thing you have to watch out for is there is a nice $199 activation fee.
Well, there's a shock.
Yeah, and so if you want the service and you want to pony up the $200, going forward, depending on your promotion, the price would be about $105 to $125 a month, just depending on what kind of service you already have with them. But what's most important about that particular, option is that it's becoming available from the cable company. And, of course, Greenlight's biggest marketing argument is that they're offering gigabit and no one else was.
Right.
So by expediting this transaction, they have to get this network wired up and finished so that they can maintain, some competition in this area and not be undercut by the cable company by saying, well, there's no reason for you folks to exist because we're already offering what you are.
Right.
So for the rest of us who don't have $199 and such, we're going to see another broadband speed upgrade. I don't know if this will happen Wednesday, but it'll happen very soon. If you currently get 100 megabits from Spectrum, you're getting another free speed upgrade. It will now be 200 megabits per second. And if you have Ultra, which right now is a measly 125, that's going up to 400 megabits.
That's nice.
So the cost for that is, if you have broadband only, it's $65 a month for the standard. It'll be $90 a month for the Ultra. And it'll be between, again, $104 and $125 for the gigabit. And that's good news for us because it means that for years and years that we've been stuck at 50.
Right.
As the maximum, unless you were lucky enough to live in Nick Francesco's neighborhood where you can get green light for years.
Yes.
And most people stuck with 10 because that was the cheapest.
You can come over to my house anytime with a laptop. You know that.
Yeah, or just like tell the neighbors, turn on your Wi-Fi because they're right across the street. But this is a really big deal for Rochester, and it's going to change, things for entrepreneurs, for,
Who
knows what new business is going to pop up because of this internet speed.
Right. If you can say, we already say to companies, come here, we'll give you a tax break. Now we can say, come here, we'll give you a tax break and gigabit internet.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There would be no YouTube or no Netflix or Hulu or any of these video companies that would be available to run because of the internet speeds that we have now, and so we couldn't have that type of business development and how much money is now being made that anyone can make a Hollywood type or a TV type show and create their own TV network now.
Exactly. And having this ubiquitous fiber all across the area is going to do something else for Tom Golisano and the rest of us, in that when 5G comes out, 5G requires a lot of these small cell antennas that will be attached to light poles and phone poles, and those are all fiber-fed. So you will need to have fiber in your neighborhood already for them to install these 5G gigabit speed wireless networks that they're talking about. And so what company will have that fiber available? Well, it will be Tom Golisano's company, of course.
There you go.
That opens the door for all sorts of new revenue, and that fiber network will be sold to AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint or whoever else wants to provision this kind of network. They would buy the wholesale access from this fiber network. So it's real smart thinking to get your fiber in the ground and have that available for the future applications. And that's Internet of Things, that's intelligent traffic. I mean, it's just it's a whole new generation.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot. We appreciate that. Phil Dampier, Stop the Cap, an amazing human being. Thanks for calling. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. We've lost an hour of our lives. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Dave Enright. It's Steve Ray. It's me, Nick Francesco, and it's you. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more sound bites and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. One thing I do want to say, if you have a DOCSIS 3.1 full duplex modem, your maximum downstream capacity is 10 gigabits per second. Fiber is capable of a petabit. So it's a gigabit, a terabit, then a petabit.
A million petabits?
Yeah.
Or a million gigabytes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way, folks. That's moving faster than your eyes can even.
That's a theoretical maximum.
Yeah.
Yep.
You will never see that in reality, but that just shows the limits each can
from
get
where we
to.
Came in a 300 baud modem.
Well, and for a lot of people,
150 baud modems.
Yep,
where I started.
110.
And
yeah, the telephone.
110 baud modem. Yeah.
The couplers.
For a lot of people, if your internet feels slow and you haven't replaced your modem in the last year, then a new modem could do a lot for you.
Well, and that's the other part of
and
it.
And the
if
routers.
You're still running it, if you've bought your own modem, for example, and a lot of people bought DOCSIS modems, if you've got a 2.0 modem.
Which was fine for 10 megabit Ethernet.
Right, because it was up to 40 megabits.
Yeah.
And they now give you 300, you can't get it.
Yep.
Right. You'll have to buy the new modem. You need a 3.1, or a 3.0 will give you gigabit. 3.0 will give you gigabit.
The other thing, too, though, is you're going to also have to check your router. You know, if you just
What I'm talking about, the DOCSIS router.
Well, and your wireless router, too.
Oh, your own wireless router. Right.
Because if you've got your own, say, Linksys or anything else that you're connecting this modem in because you're connecting umpteen devices.
Right.
You know, as your that might be old, and you might have to update some of that because, you know, some folks might have bought this, say, 20 years ago or, 10 years ago.
I did that. I had a 100 megabit router, and I switched it out for a gigabit router, and suddenly everything was faster. Well, duh.
Yep. You put a bigger pipe in, and the hose can spray more water.
That's exactly right. So
one of the sneaky things the cable company... Well, at least in my opinion, one of the sneaky things cable company has done is that since the transition to the new company, if you are still using the old Time Warner internet, you're only getting the 10 or 20 megabit. You have to call them up and specifically switch to Spectrum internet to get the 100.
Right.
They don't switch you automatically. You have to call them and ask.
Right.
So if you're still getting slower internet and haven't checked for the upgrade, look at your bill. If it says Time Warner Internet, that's the old one. If it says Spectrum Internet, that's the new one.
Yep.
Even though the company name has changed, but it's sort of the same company. The plan, you have to specifically call them and change the plan.
Yeah, they can't do
that. And quite often, it will be less than what you're paying now. and the speed will be so much higher that you'll hate yourself for not have done
doing it sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Hey, listen, I'm one of the committee members on the selection committee at the Friends and Foundation of Rochester Public Library.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to thank you again for the wonderful job you did Tuesday on your book review. And certainly, and you know, being on the committee, you hear a lot of feedback and engage the audience, and they had a wonderful time. And I just wanted to thank you again for coming there and doing that. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Gary's talking about the FERPL, I guess you guys call it. The Rochester Public Library has a thing called I think he hung up. Is that what happened there?
Okay. We lost him. Sorry about that.
The Rochester Public Library, Friends of the Rochester Public Library, has a thing called Book Sandwiched In, and they get together every week. And they were kind enough to ask me to review a book called World Without Mine by a guy named Franklin Foer. And I did that Tuesday at noon, and it was
Would we all
fun.
Like a world without mime?
Mind. Mind. World Without Mimes would be a much pleasanter place.
Although it'd be hard to tell because you can't hear him.
That's true. That's true. If you get snuck up on by
a very long speech or a very short one.
Yeah, right. I saw a cartoon the other day. A guy was doing the mime in a box, and someone else oh my gosh, he's caught in an invisible force shield. He pulls out his blaster and shoots the box that isn't there.
That he isn't in. Right. So the Friends of the Rochester Public Library were kind enough to ask me to review this book. And they do this every week. And they have a different book every week. And you can find it on their library site. And people come. And it was a great group of people. They were very engaged. They were very aware of the book that I was reviewing. They'd mm-hmm. read it, mm-hmm. which was a lovely thing. Certainly beats out most of the students I teach. And they asked intelligent and clever and funny questions, and I was very, very pleased.
The subtitle of the book is The Existential Threat of Big Tech.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool book. I enjoyed doing the review, and it was lovely. So thanks very much to the folks at the Friends of the Rochester Public Library for asking me to do that. Friends and Foundation of the Rochester Public Library. I had a good time doing it. It was a very eventful week for me because Thursday night, the Rochester Professional Consultants Network was kind enough to present me with an award. I got the Lifetime Achievement Award. Haha, jokes on them.
Your life's over now.
My life's not over.
Yes, it is.
Maybe they know something I don't. That's always a possibility. But they were very kind to give me that, and it was very nice. A bunch of other people won awards, including Todd Baxter, the Monroe County Sheriff, which was always – thank you very much. It was always a joy to see him. Jeannie Ryan was there. She was the MC. I love Jeannie. A whole bunch of people. It was a great time, and I want to thank them specifically for their kindness in presenting me with that award. It was the Steve Royal Award. All those of you who know Steve Royal know what a great guy he is, and I'm extremely honored to be the first recipient of his award. Great guy, and it was very nice. It was very pleasant. So I had a good week.
Yeah, it's very good. So congratulations. Good
thank you. Yeah. So we had more news. I should read another news item.
Wait a minute, if I could interject there.
I don't know, can you?
Do you dare say who else is one of your groupies that you met?
Who was my other groupie?
The new groupie you found at the awards ceremony.
Oh, Todd, I told you, Todd Baxter.
I didn't hear that
Monroe
part.
The Monroe County Sheriff. He's a nice guy, and he's a fan. So I was very, very pleased. I was very honored. Probably won't get me out of a ticket anywhere, but it was still very, very nice.
Hey, just that he listens to this station.
Yeah.
Says a lot too.
I really enjoyed seeing him. I've met him before. I met him at the Damon Center back a million years ago and a couple other times in between. And it was very, very nice. Nice guy. Very, very fun person. And the whole evening was great. So, okay. Apple made waves in 2016 when it decided to get rid of the iPhone's headphone jack. And again in 2017 when it announced that the iPhone X would have a virtual home button. Apple is reclaiming as much of the iPhone exterior as it can, so what could be next in the mechanical chopping block? That's becoming a more difficult question to answer. Apple is running out of iPhone surface real estate to repurpose. Apple already significantly cut down the size of the bezel, which is that border between the screen and the edge of the phone's frame, on its most recent release, the iPhone X, creating an almost entirely edge-to-edge display. But even on the X, a small notch in the screen still exists in order for the company to pack in the phone's top earpiece speaker and the camera and sensors needed for Apple's Face ID, which is a feature that's expected to soon expand to Apple's other products, including the iPad. They're running out of things to drop. Within the confines of current technology, the most likely scenario is that Apple will keep shrinking its bezel millimeter by millimeter so that the current sensors and camera can still function. They could make the camera a hole that floats inside the screen itself and make it a bit more magical, but consumers want that camera. We want selfies, so the camera will always be there. Maybe they'll have a pop-up camera. There's a laptop
there's a
now.
Phone where the, that does that. Now.
There's a laptop as well that one of the keys pops up, and that's where the camera is.
Yep.
So you can close it down and not see it.
It's, yeah, it's like a shutter cover that a lot of people like putting on
their
camera,
too. But
it's
actually one of the top function keys.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. It also then films up your nose, but that's another story entirely. So they other companies have tried to work around the design problem with experimenting with front-facing camera placement. The recently released Doogie Mix 4 allows for an edge-to-edge experience by having the display slide over the camera. The Vivo Apex has a scanner that extends out on top of the phone. The secret to truly reinventing the display design might be the screen itself. Recent reports indicate that Apple has been experimenting with touchless gestures and curved screens. If motion detectors were embedded into the screen, it would reduce the need for room in the bezel for sensors. A patent registered on March 8 shows the company is still experimenting with how to mount its electronic components underneath the display itself, and the fact that the company has started focusing on producing more of its parts, such as its own micro-LED screens, has piqued the interest of designers and investors. Samsung currently supplies Apple with OLED screens, but rumors that the company will produce its own screen has shaken Samsung investors. Samsung, which is one of Apple's biggest rivals in the space, has offered curved screens on its phone since 2013. Samsung's Air Gestures, which debuted on the Galaxy 4, allow users to scroll through their phones and pull up information by swiping at the air, which is similar to the touchless gestures described by Apple. Samsung has already shown its micro-LED television, the Wall, that the technology can be used to create a bezel-less experience. If Apple continues to develop its own micro-LED technology, it could be used to further a notchless design on a small device like the iPhone. What would you give up on your iPhone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. One of the things, Apple has never been afraid to completely abandon whatever it's done and do something new, and that's, you know, all to the good. But there, it's certainly never going to give up the selfie camera ever. People will truly stop buying the phone.
One of the sort of misleading headlines this week was that Apple is going to stop making the iPhone X.
Well,
when the iPhone 11 comes out underneath that.
Right.
But what has typically happened is when the new phone comes out, last year's phone drops in price and becomes the lower one. So right now we've got the 10 and the 8 were sort of the new phones last year, and so the 7 and the 6 are still available, say a 6S, are still available as the cheaper models.
Right.
So the expectation is the 11 would come out, and then the 10 and the 8 would drop in price, and you know the 6 would fall off the bottom. Some of the rumors are saying that probably won't happen. Because of the way the 10 is designed and its cost with the giant OLED screen, they'll probably just make an 11 and not put the 10 as the lower price for this year. But the headlines are all misleading. But it did it. That's where I saw the headline.
Right.
It did its purpose, got me to click on it.
Well, and that's the big thing, right? Yeah.
Apple to discontinue the iPhone 10. Next sentence. When the iPhone 11 comes out.
Right.
Or X2, maybe they'll call it. You know, and that's the big question. What will I call it 11? Will I call it 10.2 or X2? And will there be a 9? Because we've got the 7, the 8, and then the 10 was the radical redesign. Is the 8 gonna go into a 9?
Right. Well, of course, everything we're hearing is rumor.
Yeah.
One of the rumors is that there will be a 6.1-inch iPhone that could start at $550.
Well, and that's what they didn't do in the iPhone X, is they don't have the 10 Plus with the bigger screen, which would be 6.1 or 6.2 inches.
Right.
That because we've got the 6, 6 Plus, 7, 7 Plus. And so the big thing with the 10 is it's the size of a non-Plus phone, but the screen of a Plus phone because of the bezels being so small.
Right.
Well, some people still want a Plus phone with an even bigger screen. So we're saying, so if the iPhone X is a grand, what's the 10 Plus is going to be? You know, $1,400, $1,500?
It's unlikely it's going to be $550, right. But that's one of the rumors we're hearing.
So that could be what they've done now with the iPhone SE, is still in the product line as a 4-inch phone for $300. So maybe they'll take the 6 or the 7 technology and put it into a bigger phone because it's cheaper to make and already amateurized, basically. And so they can make a smaller phone with a bigger screen. But when they introduced the iPhone SE with that 4-inch screen, they were surprised at how well it sold. In fact, it was sold out for months because some people still want the tiny screen. And you look at a 4-inch phone next to, a 5.5-inch phone, and right. It just looks so small.
Right.
But some people still like that really, really tiny phone. And
young people in particular who have good eyes.
Yeah. They want the latest technology in a small phone.
Right.
And so that could be where it's coming from, too.
And those small phones fit better in the small pockets of these small people.
Yes.
Who carry them. So
skinny jeans.
When you're wearing skinny jeans, right. So, yeah, I get that. I do. But and that's why so many phones sell. Nobody, if everybody bet on the same horse, we wouldn't have horse races.
Yeah.
Right, so. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. This is fun. We're seeing a lot more about watches and how watches... you can read all kinds of stories about how watches are dead, even digital watches are dead, or digital watches are the new thing for the future, and blah blah blah. I don't care. Third-party watch faces for smartwatches allow users to express more of themselves while also letting them have a bit more fun with their tech. The Apple Watch already has a number of Apple-made watch faces, many of which are customizable, but third-party developers haven't been able to make their own. A report from 9to5Mac suggests that might change soon thanks to code found in watchOS 4.3.1 hitting at third-party watch face compatibility. The interesting log message states, this is where the third-party face config bundle generation would happen. It's part of the Nano TimeKit framework in the wearable software beta, which gives developers access to watch face components. While the feature doesn't appear to be active yet, it seems to refer to an inactive developer tool server that may allow communication with Xcode on macOS. It's unclear if Apple would make this feature active in watchOS 5, the next version of the Apple Watch's software that's expected to be announced at WWDC this June, which is the Worldwide Developers Conference. But every time I read it, I say, what would... No, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Even if Apple doesn't announce it as a feature in watchOS 5, the mere mention of it means it's possible that the company would allow third-party developers to create clock faces for its wearables sometime in the future. Third-party watch faces are staples of most smartwatches, as they allow both developers and users to get creative with the default screen. Wearable operating systems, including Android's Wear OS, Garmin's OS, and Fitbit OS, all have numerous third-party watch faces to choose from. Apple, however, has never allowed third-party developers to create watch faces for the Apple Watch. While some existing options derive content from other sources, like the Photos app for the custom photo face or a Disney collaboration for the Toy Story watch faces, those are all still Apple-created designs. Apple prefers to control most user-facing design features of its software, which is likely why the company hasn't allowed third-party watch faces yet. Considering the code found in watchOS 4.3.1 appears to be a placeholder, Apple may be figuring out how to best implement third-party watch faces to give developers the freedom they've been craving while also maintaining a level of clarity and usability, not to mention control, in its flagship wearable. So do you want third-party watch faces? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
No, what they're really trying to say is they haven't figured out how they can make money on it.
Well, there's that.
Well, they've
got to make it, even if they ding it for a little bit, somebody else is developing it.
Well, you download it from the App Store,
yeah,
they'll make money on it.
The App Store. The usual thing we hear is that somebody will make a really ugly watch face.
And Apple doesn't want
that. And Apple will look bad.
Right.
It's like you see this ugly watch face and you immediately assume that all of them are ugly and you won't buy the Apple Watch then.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb, but okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And you have to actually download it and put it on your watch.
Yep.
It's not like it magically appears there and you think, oh, that's junk.
I like this, you know, there's a lot of clock faces for the Fitbit smartwatch, but most of them aren't worth downloading.
Well, that's exactly
according
right.
to the article I'm reading here.
And I have...
So, if it's ugly, you don't download it.
Right.
But someone is going to like
mine.
It. Someone liked it enough to make it.
Right. Yeah. I have the original LG watch, square face, and it's got... I've got a custom face on it that has my daughter in the background, and it tells me the time and the temperature and whether it's, you know, what the cloudy conditions are. Right now it's 54 degrees and scattered clouds.
Custom complications.
And 0% chance of rain. It tells me what tomorrow's high is going to be, Monday's high is going to be, when sunrise and sunset are. I'm a weather freak, I admit it. Tells me what my battery is, tells me what the battery on my phone is at. All that in a single watch face.
Mine.
It looks great, and I don't have any issues with it, but I would hate to give all that up just to have, just because somebody else doesn't want me to have it.
Well, I've got the same watch, and you know, I went to this other website and got a bunch of different faces that I can change up the background scenery, but I love it. The features that, you know, when the text comes up, I can just look right there at my wrist. Oh, yep, I see who it's coming from.
Well, right, they all do that. But what we're talking about right now is the actual watch face.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, getting to is like you, I can sit there and customize the front of the face with the time, and I want to know the temperature, because if I want to start the car up ahead of time, if it's frosty, yeah, I got to know that. What's the day going to be like? See that? Any emails or anything else? You know, it puts a little dot there to let me know that I got to check. So, I could go to the computer and check it, but it's handy just having it there instead of having to pull out my phone and go through
that. Exactly right.
Yeah.
I use my watch more and more to do stuff. I actually used it to send a text the other day while I was driving. I was still completely hands-free. I just said, you know, text Elaine, my wife. I said, text Elaine. I told her, you know, I'm on my way home early, blah, 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 get the llamas out of the house or whatever it was. And it sent it right off with no trouble. I never took my hands off the wheel. I never took my eyes off the road.
Why I use that feature so much.
And it worked perfectly.
Yeah. What? Why do you have llamas in your house?
Yeah. It's a long-standing
joke. Are they called dogs?
What? No, no, no. No, when one of us, for decades, when one of us goes out, the joke was we're going to have a party. And of course, because we're happily married, the party would be a llama party. We'd have the llamas in to party hardy while the whoever it was out.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
So, yeah,
that's cute.
Yeah,
but no, yeah, the different faces, like you say, I do agree with Steve. There's a lot of them out there. It's like, yeah, no, this one doesn't interest me. But you know, like taste, you know, it's all different. But it's nice that there's a great selection out there to pick from. And or ones that you can customize, like you said, putting your daughter on the watch and the back facing, but yet still have all the information that you can get on those at just a quick glance.
Yep.
I love
that's
that.
Exactly right. It's easy.
The first thing you might want to know about llamas is there's no such thing as a wild one. So just in case you're thinking of inviting one of these strange and elegant animals in through your front door, you would have no need to be worried. A llama would stroll quietly down your hall, sit down carefully next to your fire, and you can be quite sure that it would have no interest in eating you.
Very nice. Good to know.
From 1993.
Yeah. So llamas, of course, that we have parties with are wild animals. Yes. There's no question of that.
Google is a wonderful tool.
Google is a frightening tool. Yes. Sometimes. The stuff I have a couple of friends who post stuff on Facebook, and I always think to myself, I don't want to know what their browser history looks like. I really do not want to know.
Apparently, there's a level in Fortnite, which is all llamas.
Yeah. And, of course, Winamp.
Yeah.
The motto used to be, it really whips the llamas posterior. I don't even know if Winamp is still around. Is it?
Get bought by somebody or...
Well, there it is, Winamp. There's more coming soon. You can still download it for Macs and PCs.
And that's still their slogan.
And that's still their slogan.
Yep.
So that's nice, winamp.com. Interesting.
Well, now, they got to have a tough, and that's their logo, too. They got to have a tough business plan, because media players come built into the OSs now. You very rarely need to download a third-party media player.
Well, they also run Shoutcast, so that has a lot to do with it. So you can... Shoutcast is an internet radio, and you can you can create your own stations very easily on Shoutcast, and so that's kind of nice, and you can go find stations and do whatever you want to do. So it's a pretty nice thing. You can find all kinds of stuff on Shoutcast, and you can run your own Shoutcast server if you want to, and of course you can see all the genres, new age, metal, folk, electronic, blues, alternative, whatever it is. Of course, if you're going to listen to blues online, you want to listen to Swingin' Blues Radio, a service of Jazz 90.1.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm bluesy and a swing song comes on, does that make me swingy and then a blues song comes on?
Yes. Yes. Swing those blues. If you've never listened to Swingin' Blues Radio, you really... really should. It's very, very cool. But there's lots and lots of stations on Shoutcast, and it's a very cool thing. And you can do your own broadcasting, and you can monetize the stuff you do and everything else. So it's a pretty cool thing. It's 100% free. It's open source software, and you can monetize it if you want to, and you can get hosts and everything else. So it's a very cool thing, and that's, I believe, where their business model comes in.
They're 20 years old today.
Today?
April 21st, 1997.
Well, happy birthday to Winamp and their llama.
And the llama you rode in on.
And the llama you rode in on, exactly. Exactly. That's pretty cool. It's available for Windows and Mac. The media player is available for Windows, Mac, and Android. But I don't think it's available on an iPhone, and I don't know that, but I don't think it is.
I don't think so, no.
And it used to be the gold standard.
Yep.
For media players. When people would say, I'm having trouble playing this, oh, download Winamp.
Mm-hmm.
You're done.
Yep.
You're done. Now it's
VLC.
VLC, that's it.
Yeah, that's become.
I can see the traffic cone. I couldn't think of
it. All those weird, the weird video.
Yeah, that was a weird, icon to come up with for your desktop. This traffic cone. You wonder what the heck?
Who knows why? But
it's been a great product.
Now it's VLC. One of the nice things about VLC that Winamp also did for a while, I don't know if they still do, is allowed you to convert things. So you can load one format and save it as another format.
Yeah, you could compress it and, or make it smaller.
All kinds of things,
everything. Right. Especially some folks would record, say, our show, and they wind up doing it at a very high quality. It was a big file. Well, it'll allow you to turn around and because it is only audio, you can sit there and compress it for a lot smaller file and, get more of them, say, on a CD if you wanted to or that. And
you're
not losing anything, really, when it comes to...
Because it's just voice.
It's just voice.
Right. Now, if you're going to record the
music,
the jazz shows, absolutely, but not this. And, of course, if you are recording any of this stuff, it is only for your own personal use and not for sale or broadcast in another medium.
Yep. Whew. Make that disclaimer. Stay within the guidelines.
Today is Winamp's birthday. So if you have a llama, you may whip it, I suppose. And by that I mean in the sense of dancing with it. Mm-hmm. The whippet dance, not, we never, no cruelty to animals. We don't want that. That's exactly right. We don't want that. But it is, tomorrow's Earth Day, don't forget. That's very exciting because,
there's an alpaca farm in, Finger Lakes.
Alpacas are not llamas.
Yeah, but they are cool.
They may have both.
They are very cool. But I love alpacas. Alpacas are very
cool. Well, in fact, I think I've seen a few, even out heading towards Buffalo. There's a ranch heading out that way. They'll come up and you just go, friendly little things.
Yep. They're very cool. So, here's one.
The generated content, the best 30 llama farms in Rochester, New York.
There are not 30 llama farms in Rochester. There are 30 farms in the area.
Yeah, so, but I searched for llama, and that's what it told me. The generated content. It grabs your search, makes a instant fake web page, and think you're...
It's easy to do these days. Yep. It knows where you're browsing from. It knows your location.
Yeah.
And so when you search llama, one of the things it says is, I'll go look for the llama farms around Rochester, New York. I'll make an instant web page and put it up as probably an ad.
So you have to be very careful about the 30 best this is. You're searching for something and that's probably generated. It may not be a real a thought out review.
But how that's YP.com, so it's yellow pages, which means that it's got reviews and everything. Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
No, one thing you were talking about this just before and how fast it can happen. I think this week or so ago, but I had just ordered some parts for Dollhouse, and I'd say less than a half hour later, I'm going out to say over to my Facebook, and along the side, there's advertisements for other places and miniature dollhouse stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, holy cheese and crackers.
Yep. They grab your searches, and then they serve you back more of the same. That's how they all work, every one of them.
It's like, get out of
That's the echo chamber. That's part of what World Without Mind was about, was the algorithms that enclose you in an echo chamber. If you are a fan of... or an opponent of Donald Trump, for example. It knows that, and so it gives you content that is for or against, for example, Donald Trump. And it just reinforces the echo chamber that you're living in. You don't hear the other side of any issue because the algorithms give you the same side. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Munich, Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Computer problems? Get answers from the experts. Sound Bites, noon to two Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Sherry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Sherry. What's up?
Hi. I have a problem with my Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge phone. The phone upgraded like towards the end of March, those system updates. And then thereafter, I switched from Time Warner Cable customer to a Spectrum customer. So I got the 100 megabytes. And by the way, they do charge you more, and you're not allowed to go to one of their double play or triple play deals. So that's up to $65, and, that's what it is. But anyway, my phone will not keep a Wi-Fi signal, and I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with it. I've cleared out the cache. I put it in safe mode. I disconnected the network switch on the phone. It just won't stay on Wi-Fi. It keeps going out with an exclamation mark. Everything else in the house works, both my computers and my other cell phone, which is not connected to anything. So I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with it. Any ideas?
Okay. Yeah, this is not an unusual problem, I'm afraid, with the Galaxy S6. So there's a whole list of things that we can do, and there's about a dozen and a half of them. But a couple of things you can do. Obviously, factory reset of your phone, but that's a little drastic.
I did that, too.
Oh, you did that, and it still didn't help.
Right.
Forgetting the network, the Wi-Fi network?
Pardon?
Did you? Well, see, if you did a factory reset, wow.
There's an option to forget the network so that it then rejoins it again.
I did that.
Okay.
You're not giving us the right answers.
Under settings, there's a Wi-Fi setting. If you hit the menu of that, you can go to advanced, and there's a choice for keep Wi-Fi on. Make sure that's set to always. It may be that that's not set to always, and therefore it's turning itself off.
Going into like a sleep mode?
Yeah. Also under settings, more network, mobile network, you should uncheck the connection optimizer.
Oh.
Since it kind of doesn't.
Network optimizer.
Yeah. Steve can put a link, is in fact in the midst of putting a link to this up on our website so you can see the whole list.
Okay.
But...
Have you checked for another update since then? Maybe something that was broken got fixed with another update.
Yeah, I did. I even was on the phone with AT&T. They didn't give me much help. I'm not sure what to do here with it, but I will do all those extra things you told me. I went on the internet and tried to see what everybody else was saying about it, and there's a lot of other people that had the same problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Upset with Samsung, and because nobody would help them. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I've got an S5, and I've never had an issue. But they say that some people are having the same issue with an S5. But there's a bunch of things that you can try, and I would try each one individually. You know, here's the issue. It's a troubleshooting thing. When you make a bunch of changes, you never know which one worked. So you make one change and wait a few days and see if the problem goes away, and then you make another change and see if the problem goes away. So it's good. This is going to take you a while.
Yeah.
But there's a list, and my suspicion is you're going to hit it in the first three or four.
Okay.
Is it only your home network, or have you tried going to like a friend's house and see if it falls off their network?
No, it's just my home network.
That's one of them on the list. What wireless router do you have?
A Motorola Surfboard Doxis 3.
Yeah, Doxis 3
should be okay.
Good modem.
And that's the all-in-one cable modem and wireless router?
Right.
But are you saying that you have not tried it at someone else's house, or it doesn't happen?
No, I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's part of troubleshooting. That'll tell you whether it's your modem that's the issue, or it's your phone.
Go for a long coffee break and try the Wi-Fi there. Yeah.
Well, if that was the issue with my modem, I mean, why do the other devices work?
Right. I'm not saying that it is that, but that's just one other thing to eliminate. But you're right.
The chipset.
If you don't have that problem with anything else, it is unlikely that it's that, because the modem, the router, doesn't really know it's a phone as opposed to a laptop or whatever. It doesn't care.
Right.
Wireless is wireless is wireless. So,
matter of fact, I'm watching your show right now on my S4 connected to Wi-Fi through and YouTube.
Right. Yep. So it is clearly the phone, so you don't have to worry about that. So, yeah, try those other things and let us know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah, if a factory reset didn't fix it, that sounds
weird.
Like a hardware problem. Maybe the antenna wire has come loose.
Well, that's possible, but it's also possible that the factory settings don't include some of those...
The switches to keep it on, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you leave Wi-Fi on, it drains the battery faster. So it's possible that this optimization turns Wi-Fi off so that your battery doesn't drain so fast.
Right. Andy just called in and said he had the same issue with his phone. What he did is he went and took it back to AT&T, and they changed the SIM chip. It was a defective SIM chip.
Ooh.
That's a possibility.
That he was experiencing the same issue, and one of the updates caused it to mess up, and he took it back, and AT&T put a new SIM chip in it, and now it's working fine.
So, Sherry, walk into your... Here's the other thing. When you call them, it's easy for them to kind of ignore you. When you walk into their store...
You're in their face.
You're in their face, and it's harder for them to ignore you. So, Sherry, take your phone, go into AT&T, tell them the symptoms, tell them you believe it's a defective SIM chip, and then stand there staring at them till they change it out. And that should cost you zero.
And that way she can also... test it out there as far as getting onto a wireless internet.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, that's a good point. Thanks, Andy. It's a very difficult thing, troubleshooting stuff like that, because it could be the SIM chip, could be any one of 50 different settings in the phone, could be the modem, could be something else interfering with the connection.
And sometimes it's one chipset doesn't like a different chipset. It doesn't make any sense,
right.
But this device doesn't like working with that device.
Yeah.
Right, and we see that more often than not. We see people putting in an extra hardware card in their desktop, for example, and suddenly things don't work well.
And she said that it did an update and then didn't work.
Right, so it might
be. So there could have been something in that update.
Exactly.
That messed things up.
Exactly, but we see that time and time again.
Constantly.
Because one of the problems is, of course, they do test updates before they send them out. They do some quality assurance and some quality testing stuff. But the problem is there's a gazillion phones out there, and they can't test every type. And as Andy said, it could be a defective SIM chip, and the update hits the defect that didn't bother it before.
Yeah, it was fine and
some
happy.
Some change in the code activated the defect.
Yep.
So I get that. It's certainly a possibility.
But that's the whole thing with electronics and, you know, and updating stuff and that. It's not as simple as it was back in the older days. You know, I mean, say even computers. You know, we didn't have that many peripherals hanging off of it like we do now. There was keyboard, monitor, disk drive. That was it when they first started out. Didn't
sometimes
have
sometimes a printer.
Yeah.
If you were fancy dancy, you had a modem.
Yep. But I mean, you know. You didn't have all the stuff hanging off of the advanced video cards like we do now. The hard drives, the memory, and the different speeds of memory, different types of hard drives. I mean, everything has just changed, and there's so many other things can be thrown into the mix that can really mess stuff up.
Yeah. And one of the tricks for getting the bundled prices with some of these services is use your spouse's credit card.
Right.
You are not a new customer, so you don't get the new customer price, but your spouse is a new customer.
Right, exactly.
So
right.
Sometimes that works.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that works. But yeah, basically when it comes to things like, and phones are sealed units mostly nowadays. You know, I have a Galaxy S5 and I can change the back, I can pop it off, I can change the battery, I can change the SIM card, no problem. A lot of the newer phones and certainly the Apple phones, you can't get into them. So if you've got a problem, you kind of have to take it back to the store.
No user serviceable parts inside.
Right.
In fact, one of the annoyances we have, we're an authorized Apple service center. There are non-service center parts inside that we can't replace, and we have to send it to Apple.
Gotta love Apple. Yeah. Gotta love Apple.
Or they make it, you know... There's a tool to make sure you put enough pressure when you're gluing the battery back down.
Yeah.
They sent us that one.
Oh, that's nice.
The tool to fix put the screen back in, they won't send us. So some of the tools they send us, some of the tools we have to buy. It's interesting being a service center.
I don't doubt that. Okay. All right, that music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in every week as you so often do. I want to thank Phil Dampier, who is not affiliated with any of the companies you talked about today. But he fights for us every day, and we appreciate that. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because you keep us alive. We are member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we will see you in just 166 hours.